Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Long. He's a teacher of religious studies at Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania, and he is the editor and also a contributor to the journal Religion, specifically an issue entitled Perspectives on Reincarnation, Hindu, Christian, and Scientific. We hadn't discussed reincarnation on this program in many years and thought it would be a good time to just take another look at that. A little bit about our guest. As I mentioned, he is a professor at Elizabethtown College. He teaches courses on Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, as well as a first-year seminar on Star Wars and Asian philosophy, Sanskrit, and comparative theology, and interfaith engagement. He is the author of 3 books and a wide array of articles on Hinduism, Indian philosophy, and religious pluralism. And he's a consulting editor for Sutra Journal. Please welcome once again to Common Threads, Dr. Jeffrey Long. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, Fred. Thank you for having me back.
Certainly, certainly. Last week, just to capsulize things a bit, we talked a lot about Hindu perspectives of reincarnation, how it relates to Buddhism and Jainism, the other Dharmic religions, and also a little bit on the early Christian teachings. I'd like this week to start off with the scientific, because that is one of the things that, the title of the issue is Perspectives on Reincarnation, Hindu, Christian, and Scientific, which is kind of interesting because I'm wondering, do you think there would ever be a journal like this except devoted to, say, a Muslim or a Christian understanding of the afterlife? You know, perspectives on resurrection, Muslim, Christian, and scientific. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. I suppose it's possible. It would require someone to have a deep interest, enough scholars to have a deep enough interest in the topic to pursue it. And what I find is that with the topic of reincarnation, there's an awful lot of interest among those who accept the idea, but also among those who are critical of the idea or skeptical of it, but still wishing to engage with it. So if there was a similar level of interest in perspectives on the afterlife in the Abrahamic religions, I could envision it happening. The scientific side of that would probably be focused on what are often called near-death experiences, which are often used, I know certainly by many contemporary Christians, to bolster faith or belief in a Christian vision of the afterlife, because you have people going through a tunnel and coming to a white light and seeing God at the end, seeing their departed relatives, and seeing that as proof that that heaven exists. And I think there's even a popular book by a doctor who had such an experience and basically making that argument. The interesting thing about that is those particular kinds of views of heaven aren't necessarily incompatible with reincarnation, because many reincarnation belief systems include the idea that there is something like what you might call a rest period between lifetimes, in which one is in sort of a heavenly realm, processing the knowledge and the experiences from the last life. Or not, right. Or there are unpleasant realms as well for those who have harder lessons to learn, but that one eventually is reborn into a physical form after those experiences.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of people these days who they don't believe in reincarnation, they don't believe in the Christian or Muslim paradigm, but they do believe in an afterlife, and they do believe that an all-forgiving God, so everyone who's ever passed is sort of undergoing the same experience, which admittedly challenges one if you're thinking that Mother Teresa and Saddam Hussein are now experiencing the same environment.
Right, right. And in fact, that's one reason I'm personally not so drawn to that view, because the idea that there is divine mercy, divine grace, is very appealing to me. At the same time, there also needs to be justice. And one of the attractions of the idea of reincarnation is you get both. There's mercy in the sense that you have potentially infinite second chances, but you also have to clean up your mess. So the opportunity is then there to do that in multiple lifetimes, or to make it worse, depending on our freedom. And I think some concept of free will is quite integral to most versions of reincarnation.
What I heard someone say one time is that according to Eastern views, microcosmically we have free will, macrocosmically we don't. Meaning, of course, that in our individual lives, we can do whatever we want. We can go towards God or away from God, but macrocosmically, we're sort of predestined to find that ultimate spiritual fulfillment. Would you go along with that?
Something close to that. I mean, the particular Hindu school of thought that I'm a member of, the Vedanta tradition of Ramakrishna, according to that tradition, all beings will eventually reach liberation. All beings will eventually reach God and reach their ultimate fulfillment. How long that will take and whether that's something that can even be measured in sort of human temporal terms is another question. And whether this is a predestination or whether it's simply going to be the case and that our wise seers have seen that future unfold is something that it seems to vary, right? It depends on which traditions or which texts one is looking at. There is a sense in which you could say ultimately, from a Vedantic perspective, there would be no free will, which is from the sort of the highest transcendental perspective, in which all of space and time and history and all of this that we talk about as reality is not in fact really the case, that all of this has been a projection, that the reality is that we have all been one with Brahman all along. From that perspective, I would say there's no free will, but that within this, what you could call this matrix, and I am thinking about the Matrix films when I use that word, within this matrix of time and space, we experience what we perceive as free will. So I guess that's a roundabout way of saying yes, I agree with what you said.
So let's get into the scientific. Let me say, when I mentioned earlier that we hadn't talked about this subject in a long time, I'm pretty sure that the last time we did was with Dr. Ian Stevenson.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and this would be probably 15 years ago. It could be closer to 20. I really don't remember. But a lot of times when I get into discussions about afterlife in general, and we talk about all of the possible theories and doctrines, when we come to reincarnation, I do mention, just Google reincarnation University of Virginia.
Yes.
It does have, the subject has a little bit more cachet, knowing that there's a whole department at their medical school.
Yes.
Describing this subject. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. So, and I'm glad you mentioned Ian Stevenson. He is the predecessor and was the mentor of Dr. Jim Tucker, who is now continuing Stevenson's research. And Stevenson was a pioneer. And as with all pioneers, of course, later generations of scholars look back and see what mistakes were made. And there have been some pretty good criticisms of Stevenson's method. And some of those have been articulated by a scholar named Jonathan Edelman, who's actually one of the contributors to my volume, and though he doesn't get into that so much in this volume, but in a previous article. And the issue with what Stevenson was doing, Stevenson was looking at children, cases of children, who seemed to have very clear memories of things that happened in past lives. And what was interesting is that he followed up on these cases and found that the incidents and the persons and so on that these children were describing were real, that they may have talked about, you might have a little girl from India talking about having lived as a woman in the neighboring village a certain number of years ago, and she had children with this name, and this name. And sure enough, you go to the village, and yes, there are those children, They're all adults now, and they talk about their mother who departed, you know, so many years ago. It's very plausible then to say, well, this little girl is the reincarnation of that woman. The flaw that some scholars found with that type of research is that children are, of course, very suggestible. Children want to keep adults happy. And, you know, this is why children testifying in court has always been so problematic, because they're easily prompted with leading questions to say what you want them to say. So if you want to make a case for reincarnation, it would be not a difficult thing to persuade a child that this was what they were thinking. What's really interesting about Tucker's research is he has eliminated those cases as candidates. Some of them may or may not be real cases of reincarnation, but he sets them aside on the basis of the principle that, you know, we really need to follow stories where the children have had no prompting from parents, where the information they disclose is not readily available. It certainly precludes things like being the reincarnation of a famous person whose life story would be well known and easily accessible through the media and so on. And he has found some incredible cases, and I think one of the most remarkable, and it's been written about in several places, and I first took notice of Tucker's work actually through seeing it on NBC News. A little boy named Ryan Monroe in Oklahoma, who had very vivid memories, which were found to be accurate representations of the life of a Hollywood agent named Marty Martin. Marty Martin was not a well-known person, not a household name. In fact, a fair amount of research and digging had to be done to find out information about Marty Martin. But it turned out that Ryan's memories of this man, to whom he was not related, had no other connection, his memories were incredibly accurate. In fact, his memory even altered, it even led to the correction of Martin's death certificate, because his death certificate said that he had died at the age of 59, and Ryan said he had died at 61, and when they consulted with Martin's family, it turned out that sure enough, the death certificate was wrong, and Ryan was right, and Martin had died at the age of 61. So that's a really remarkable case. And unlike cases from places like India or Sri Lanka or Thailand, where a lot of people believe in rebirth, Ryan's parents are Southern Baptists who did not believe in reincarnation and, in fact, were quite distressed by the whole thing, which is why they took him to Dr. Tucker in the first place. They said, what's wrong with our child? He's having these memories, and they're sort of disturbing him and so on. And so what Tucker does is he's actually, I think he shows a lot of integrity, because the dominant view among most scientists in terms of their philosophy, in terms of how they perceive the nature of existence, it tends to be a materialist view, where ultimately causation is a matter of some kind of physical proximity between objects in the world. And so some kind of mysterious influence which would lead the information in Marty Martin's mind to now be in Ryan Monroe's mind without some kind of physical intermediary between them, that would just be seen as impossible, right? So from that point of view, reincarnation, or really any afterlife scenario that's not physically based, would be seen as just implausible and superstition and rejected out of hand. And what Tucker argues is that these cases clearly indicate that the materialist paradigm is not an adequate account of reality, that it's just, you know, not the case that the memories in Ryan's mind could be easily explained or explained at all, really, through any conventional physical means. And he goes even further and says, we don't even have to, on a scientific basis, accept the kind of mainstream materialism, because quantum theory is already shown it to be deeply problematic. And the last two chapters of his book, Return to Life, get into quantum theory and how things like the famous double slit experiment that was a big part of how quantum mechanics took off really show that consciousness itself is a feature of reality. It's not a byproduct of some physical process. Maybe consciousness as we know it, as we experience it with our brains, certainly that is deeply implicated in neurochemical processes, but that consciousness itself is somewhere, you could say, built into the nature of existence itself. And with that understanding, you could envision the consciousness of one person moving on into another physical body, really without any difficulty. And what I find fascinating about Jim Tucker's work is that he articulates this on the basis of quantum theory, and he actually presents a model of reality in which our experience is essentially dreamlike in nature. So he compares death and rebirth to having a dream, and then that dream ends, and then you just move on into another dream. And in the same way, this dream world that we call our life, when it ends, we move on into another dream realm and consciousness continues on. And what's so fascinating about that is, without any apparent prior knowledge of Indian traditions, Tucker is essentially given a Vedantic and Buddhist account of the nature of consciousness and rebirth. He's sort of come upon this through his scientific investigation.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and today we're speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Long of Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania on the journal Religion, specifically the issue Perspectives on Reincarnation, Hindu, Christian, and Scientific. Now, I remember my interview with Dr. Stevenson many, many years ago. And he was saying that the theology of it, the karma aspect of it, he couldn't make heads or tails on. He wasn't able to see why somebody would be reborn, this person this life, another person another. But that's not really their job to figure that out, is it?
Not really, no. And I think that would require some kind of moral assessment of someone's life, and that's a very difficult thing to do, right? That is a very perilous venture. It would require some set of standards being applied. And of course, people are so complex. We may judge someone by their actions, but we really don't know what their motivations were. Sometimes we don't even know our own motivations ourselves. So I think getting into the business of evaluating karma is very tricky. And in fact, the Buddha once famously said that we shouldn't even do it, that you really cannot judge another person's karma based on the circumstances of their life, because you really don't know why they're having the experience that they're having. And there's a great story. I think some of your listeners might be familiar with this book, Many Lives, Many Masters. It was written by a doctor who was doing hypnotherapy with people. And hypnotherapy is, of course, another area where people have done some paranormal investigation and past life investigation. But there's a story in there that's very moving about how he and his wife had a child who died in infancy. And this message comes through one of his patients that this was not a punishment, this was not bad karma, that in fact a very wise and highly evolved soul took the form of that infant child, because knowing that going through that experience would make the doctor and his wife much closer and make their relationship and their experiences in life much more meaningful, which is actually what happened as a result of that tragedy. So it's not really the scientist's role to evaluate things like karma, then you're really getting into the philosophical realm.
Right, I agree. I remember I attended a forum on afterlife theories, and one person was talking about reincarnation. And I just remember that there was a young lady, she was college age, I think, and she was just an angel, just the sweetest countenance you could imagine. And she was in a wheelchair. And after the person was talking about reincarnation, she was concerned that she must have done something horrible to be handicapped in this life.
Right. And it broke my heart just to hear her ask the question. But the speaker was very wise and indicated a wide variety of reasons, many of them non-punitive, as to why she would be in that position.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's important to keep in mind. And if we actually look at the Sanskrit root of the word karma, a very good translation of karma is actually work. And I think if we think of our karma as the work we need to do in this life in order to achieve our higher spiritual perfection, this creates a less judgmental way of thinking. It's not so much that someone has good karma or bad karma. We have difficult karma and easy karma, right? We have work to do that can involve great difficulty for ourselves, and we have work to do that may be relatively easy and straightforward. But thinking of it as our task to perform rather than as our punishment, I think is a much much more compassionate, I think is much more true to the original traditions where these ideas are articulated, that we really shouldn't think of it so much as punishment, because ultimately, and certainly according to the tradition that I'm in, we're all headed for God realization, and the question is, how do we get there? And it may require overcoming some obstacles and doing some difficult things in the process of reaching that realization. But that the fact that it's difficult should not be seen as a punishment or a judgment.
One thing, getting back to the clinic at the University of Virginia, I'm so curious, number one, how do people find that clinic? Again, the parents of this young boy who in a previous life, I'm going to take a guess, was a Jewish talent agent.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah. And here they are, Southern Baptists.
Yes, from Oklahoma.
From Oklahoma, right. It astounds me that they would want to bring their child to a place where reincarnation, something that is in complete opposition to their personal theology, that they would bring them there, as opposed to anywhere else, I guess.
Right.
A psychiatrist who, a materialist psychiatrist perhaps, or therapist who would do his best to talk the kid out of believing what what he's going through.
Right, right. I think they must have been recommended to Tucker as someone who had expertise in this particular type of phenomenon. And the university itself is rather careful, as they should be, rather neutral about, you know, rather than asserting that, you know, we've proven reincarnation, but they're doing research into a phenomenon, which is children claiming to have these kinds of memories. And the validity of those memories is being researched as a scientific phenomenon. But I think Ryan Monroe's parents, and I've never met them or spoken to them, but my sense is they just wanted to understand what was happening with their son. And these were people with some expertise that could help them. And must have come recommended very highly by someone they trusted. That would be my guess.
One thing that I've noticed, as you know, in my position, I find myself in gatherings of variety of faiths and traditions and all of that. When I am in gatherings, whether they be formal, you know, academic, interfaith, whatever, when I'm with, say, Hindus and Buddhists and Sikhs and Jains, reincarnation or afterlife in general just doesn't come up a great deal, more so than when I'm with other traditions. Again, now when you're with Jews, there's not a lot of talk of the afterlife, and I know that a lot of Jews don't even believe in an afterlife in the same way that other people do.
Right.
Okay. But even the ones who do believe in an afterlife, you don't really hear much about it.
Right.
And the same is true, at least for me, in the Eastern traditions. I'm curious if you found that as well.
I think so, too. I think it's just not a topic that comes up. First of all, you know, you would need to be talking about death for some reason. And I have known it to come up in funeral context and so on.
Where it'll come up.
That's where it will come up. Otherwise, in polite conversation, most people aren't going to be talking about death, unless you're a strange person like me who's just fascinated by all this. So, if it comes up when I'm around, it's because I bring it up. But I agree with you. I think it's a nice thing to point out in an interfaith context for any of our listeners who think, well, this reincarnation idea is just crazy. It's, you know, I can't believe in that. How do Hindus and Buddhists and Jains, you know, how do they believe in this? I think it's important to point out that for all religions and all communities, at least that I've encountered in my lifetime, what matters most is how you live here and now. And if your reincarnation belief is not informing your ethics and your decision-making in a positive way, then it's really not benefiting you, right? But if you're living your life and you're living according to your values, that's what matters. And I think these topics like reincarnation come up, as it did for me. My father died when I was quite young, and I talk about some of this in my essay. When death strikes, then we think about these things, and it forces us to reflect on the larger context of our lives. But unless we're facing a trauma like that, typically I think it's just not something people care to think about. I mean, people don't want to think about death. They want to think about life and, enjoying the here and now and doing good in the here and now. And I think that's where the emphasis of people that I find is in all religions.
Sure. Yeah. And one speaker said to a group, he said, I'm quite sure that most, if not all of you in this room, don't believe in reincarnation. He says, but I can tell you why you don't believe in reincarnation. He said, because you were a skeptic in your last life.
Very good.
So, listen, Jeffrey, on that note, we have to end. We are down to the wire here, but thank you so much. It's been a really illuminating half hour, and thanks for last week as well.
Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. Dr. Jeffrey Long has been our guest here on Common Threads. We've been talking about the journal Religion and the special issue entitled Perspectives on Reincarnation, Hindu, Christian, and Scientific. Please join us again next week right here on Common Threads.